come, I decided I'll make it a truly international conference by wearing a sari. So last call for the 5-year hat. If somebody hasn't picked up, please do that. Okay, so we are... Okay, so this is track, whatever, and the next speaker is, no, I've just been on a roll for 3 days now. So I'm Nitya, in case you have never seen me before in this 3 days, I'm Nitya from Singham, and I have the pleasure of saying thank you. And what we did, I'm summarizing the conference, the 3 days of fun that we had and the learning that we did. And so I have a few slides put together. It's not too many, but just a few slides. Bear with me. And after my closing ceremony, we will have a panel, the final plenary panel for the day, which is Common Criteria and FIPS, how they play together. And this was my popular choice from you last year, attendees. Okay? So we are at the 5th International Conference, ICMC Conference, as it's popularly known. And my name, as I said, is Nitya. Let me go down. So 5 years and growing. From 2013 to 2017, what we've done is when we started, it was a 2-day conference. Now it's a 3-full-day conference with 1 full pre-conference workshop. We started as only one track, which is only FIPS. Now we went to FIPS, Common Criteria, Industry Verticals, Embedded Crypto, Quantum Safe, Common Criteria. No, I already said Common Criteria, it's twice. Okay, Open Source, End User, Policy and Ethics. So we have, as you see, we have expanded and grown from just being a certification conference to the industry-wide crypto conference. And we're still growing. We were a single program, single certification program when we started, which was main focus was FIPS. As we heard from E, we started the process, they started the conference closer to NIST, but now we have international participants as well. We had this year, we had 7 international schemes participating, and we are always looking for more. So please, if you all come from a country in which did not get a chance to come here, tell them about us. We started with just 1 plenary keynote when we first started. Now we have plenary keynotes, and we have individual track keynotes. As you know, we start each of the track with a track note or a keynote for that track, which sets the track. We started with 72 presentations. Now we had 114 presentations. We had 1 panel on the first one. Now we had 5 panels on this panel discussions. 18 countries, this is attendees from 18 countries participated. The first one, now it's 25 countries participating. We started with an audience of 152. Now last year it was 283, and this year it is 370 attendees, which means we grew quite a bit from last year to this year. And that's how well we are being now recognized in the industry. Thank you all for that. In terms of program summary, as you can see, I've already mentioned some of this, so I won't repeat that. Tools and tips is something we heard today, this time. To me, one of the biggest takeaway from this, these sessions and this conference is the automation. So the automation is coming and coming soon. That's what I heard. We heard about different flavors of OpenSSL, quantum crypto, crypto in Common Criteria. I was almost writing it as crypto criteria, then I said, no, Common Criteria, I'll say crypto in Common Criteria. We heard about the IoTs, the cars and the and other things in the IoTs. We heard the new session that we started this time, that new track, policy and ethics, was very interesting. I was track chairing there most of the day, and I found it really interesting. We had work group updates. Last year we didn't have many work group updates. This year we had every work group that was working on some IG or the other participate in that. And of course, the ever popular game show. So we have been busy all these 3 days. This is the section where I finished with what we did. Now this is the section to say thank you to everybody. This conference could not be done without the help of so many volunteers, so many people, and so many participants. We definitely want to first thank the CMVP and CAVP. From the first year onwards, they have been very supportive of us. They have always participated. Whenever I give them a call or somebody else from the program committee gives them a call, they are willing to give us their time. So CMVP, CAVP, thank you. So NIAP, from the previously NIAP and CMVP, and I'm not the first one to say this, I think Mike also mentioned that, they could not be seen under the same roof at the same time on one day. It changed some years back, which is like 3 years back. The first time we thought about it from the program committee, I called Janine, and Janine said, why not? Mike and I will share the mic one day. Pun intended. So there was one session, which was the 3 years back, we had one session with Mike Cooper and Janine sharing one discussion. And since then, they have participated more, and they have also supported us heavily this year. So thank you to them. International schemes. Again, we have been calling international schemes, and many have shown interest and have participated this year. Chinese scheme, Japanese scheme, Malaysian scheme this time. So we really appreciate them coming this far and giving their time to us and telling us about their scheme. Speakers and panelists, of course, without so many speakers and without the panelists, just like here, we wouldn't have such a great conference. So thank you. Reviewers and moderators. Now, again, what you see in these 3 days doesn't happen in just 3 days. It takes many months and many weeks of preparation. We get for 117, was it abstract? We get over 100 and somewhere between 160 to 180, sometimes even 200 abstracts. So somebody has to read. A group of people have to read it, and then they review, they put a name, number together, and then we all sit down and think and pick the ones that come up at the top. So all those things take your own personal time. So I want to thank every speaker and every panelist that helped make the thing, and the reviewers and the moderators. And again, the next one is the co-program committee. There are about five of us. Erin, wherever you are, Erin. Marcus is not here. Steve, and Ryan Hill from MADSEC. We meet, we have a conference call every other week towards the end, and at least once a month, starting in 2 weeks. Our work starts in 2 weeks' time, again for the next 2018. So we've been, and of course, we have Bill and always on the call. So we together, we do a lot of work behind the scene for this. So thank you, my co-program committee members. Conference sponsors and exhibitors, again, this cannot run without the financial support from these folks. So we thank the sponsors and exhibitors for their support. Again, CNXTD. Even media services, which is basically, you know, whatever it says here, Bill and Nikki. So everybody comes through Bill and Nikki, right? And you have seen, you know, it's not just now, it's through the year when he registers. Anytime you have a call, you have a question, you send them an email, and within 10, 15, or even within an hour max, you will get a response. And so Bill and Nikki, thank you all. And Bill and Nikki always recruit volunteers. They always recruit volunteers to help with this event when the event happens, and I want to thank the volunteers as well. ADSEC, our founder, without them, we definitely won't have this. So I definitely want to thank ADSEC, our founder. And last but not the least, all of you, we all together, and I'm also an attendee, so together we all make this conference a good and successful conference. So thank you all. Give yourself a hand, big hand. So this is not the end of it. You have notes to take, you have slides to look at, and you have other things to do. Homework. So survey. So this, I think Bill may have already sent out the survey. Yes, Bill? Okay. So Bill has sent out the survey like last year. Please be encouraged that you fill that out and you send it to, there must be a time limit also, please do send it. It's not just the numbers, I was telling in the other track, it's not just the numbers, we do read the comments, any comment, every comment, and we read that and we take that into account. So please take your time to write the comments, good, bad or ugly. Join CMUF, you've heard this many times. And the, here is some folks have actually come up to me and asked me to about the URL. So here's the URL again. These slides are going to be available. I'm hoping this too, right, Bill? Okay. So you can always go go look at that. And where to look at it, how to look at it is on your page 3, I think, I believe, of the program. So you can do that. And the next thing is the interesting part, things to do. Tell your boss that you had fun learning and networking. Okay, not so much the fun part, I believe. But say you had fun learning, let's put it this way. Not the fun part in that sense, fun learning and networking. They'll definitely enjoy, appreciate that. So go tell them, and as a corollary to that, ask for the budget for next year's ICMC. So. How about next year? So what do we know about next ICMC? The sixth ICMC, we still haven't decided yet where it is going to be. It's in the works because of all the, you know, location. With, as we are expanding, we need to get a bigger place to accommodate. So there are more, proposals have been sent out for these four locations. So DC could be again, DC, San Francisco, Ottawa, or Vancouver. So if you see, there are two US and two Canadian sites in the cards. When is it? Again, we don't know the exact dates, but depending on which location, which what availability is there. It could be April 30th, May 7th, or the May 14th week. Right? These are the beginning of the week, right, Bill? Okay. And the next thing to note is, as I said, we take a couple of weeks break and then we start planning for the next ICMC. So we know around October, watch out, look out for the call for papers, right? Call for abstracts. Do give in, as you have heard, you have seen so many presentations and then something clicks and you say, hey, I can talk about this. I know a little bit more about this. So we would love to hear that. Please do the send in that. In closing, again, once again, survey. Please fill your survey. Join the CMUF conference presentations. Again, they are available, both the slides, all slides are available, and the recordings are available, raw recordings. They're not professional, but they're raw recordings, but they're available. And finally, bon voyage. And I hope to see you all in 2018 ICMUF. Thank you once again. All right. With that, who takes over? Okay, Steve will take over now.
Thank you all so much for coming this year. And we're going to close with a bit of a, I can find my, okay, we're going to start with our summary panel. The topic, FIPS and Common Criteria, how they play together, was actually your choice. If you all remember, Bill put up a survey, and this was the choice that everyone who voted picked for our closing topic. Notice we do have all industry and lab people here today. We don't have anyone from any of the schemes or from CMVP. That was a decision made to let the industry and the users have their say, but we certainly intend to be respectful of the governmental organizations we work with. This is intended to be interesting and intended to for people to be able to say what they want. And we're going to open everything up for questions and make this a back and forth. We want it to be an open discussion, but everyone please remember to be kind. Okay, for the panel, we have Aaron Connor. He's the director of EWA Canada. I'm not going to go and give everyone's bio, since pretty much everyone up here has spoken this week or spoken many, several times before. And just to be certain, the people at this table have got many, many years of experience in FIPS and Common Criteria. Tammy Green, senior principal architect from Symantec. Lori Mack, director in security certifications at Gemalto, and Bill Shelton, director of federal certifications and policy at Juniper Networks. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with one question, which is one that I've heard a bunch about this week. That's just kind of our kickoff. Please feel free, if we start to slow down, raise your hand, I'll pick on you and we can pick new questions, or I've got a few more seeds after that. But for starters, can FIPS 140 and CC participants look forward to agreeing upon an algorithm testing reference standard that's more widely accepted internationally? Of course, all of us discuss about the fact not all nations accept CAVs. Different nations, different schemes want different things out of us. So let's start off with that. Bill, since you're closest.
Oh, great. Okay. Can you hear me? Turn
on a little mic on too, please. Little switch on top.
Already got it.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah. I certainly hope this occurs. From Juniper Networks' perspective, we have, I was just counting, we have six major product lines with dozens of products within those lines. And the challenge, our goal is to try to, not make an industry of just doing these certifications. So the benefit that we've seen is, common criteria, we've moved to collaborative protection profiles, we've expanded this, is the ability to kind of do something once and meet all of the needs. And when those start to differ, that gives us pause.
From a Gemalto perspective, we have FIPS of our hardware cryptographic module, and we take that same hardware cryptographic module and run it through a European Common Criteria evaluation, and we find that there are big differences and the crypto isn't necessarily accepted, and it would be tremendous if we could find a way to have, and I know there were some talks about that this past 3 days, where we could find a way to have those crypto implementations and algorithms that we already have approved through a valid Oracle, through NIST, and widely accepted in the world, but accepted by our common criteria internationally as well as here in the States.
I got the one on the right. I have to agree with my panelists here. We run into the same thing doing evaluations through different schemes, that when you leave North America, the FIPS validation and CAVS validation for algorithms is not necessarily accepted. And there's no real secret sauce to these algorithms that are being validated. They're all published algorithms. The concern seems to be with what's the reference standard for the testing, and I think some of these the government organizations should be able to come together and if not share their reference standards, at least be able to do some cross-testing of reference standards so that they can say that, yes, country A, we accept that your standard is good and gets the same answers as our standard, so we'll accept your algorithm validation. Hopefully that's where things will be going with the working groups that are currently set up under the CCDB, that they will get to a point where the common criteria extends down into common cryptography.
Oh, I have to remember that one.
So my thought is maybe it's a little bit different. So I don't think that one country should necessarily trust the testing of a different country. And there are good reasons for that, right? We've seen this over time. This is not uncommon where maybe there were mistakes made. Maybe there were mistakes made on purpose. Or maybe just out of not knowing what needed to happen, where other nation states may have seen something like that. And so it frightens me if there would be a single place that would be doing the validation, or that, you know, our country would trust a different country to provide that sort of information. It seems to me that, you know, if we go back to typical types of security, four eyes, you know, the more eyes you have taking a look at it, the better, but it also takes more time. Perhaps we should be a little bit more collaborative in doing some of the testing so that way we actually get multiple standpoints. And I think that would be better and may also allow us to share a little bit more in terms of different algorithms that maybe, as we were talking about here, that maybe we don't accept those in our country, but we recognize that particular algorithm is still valuable and we could still test that.
And one thing, another thought on all that maybe in one of these points for later, is that now that FIPS 140-3, we're looking at ISO 19790, that may be an opportunity for more collaborative work since the ISO standard is again a worldwide standard, the same way common criteria is, you know, CCRA 26 countries, not quite worldwide, but same thing. Hopefully we could potentially be collaborative, as Tammy's saying, and come to an agreement in different countries all working together to produce algorithm testing that would be accepted throughout, you know, a larger venue.
Can I add just one thing to that thought? I mean, from my perspective at least, there's a difference between kind of consolidating around a consistent set of requirements and always testing in the same place. I mean, since we've moved to protection profiles, and my focus, right, I sit actually in the sales organization of my organization and deal primarily with the U.S. and with NIAP. We've done common criteria certification against NIAP protection profiles in the U.S., in Canada, and Australia. And so there's multiple different organizations doing the evaluation. So I think that's a little bit different from that risk standpoint. But the only reason we could do that is there was some agreement about what the requirement should be. And then and then we still have it today, if there's a thin sliver of an additional requirement that some local organization or place or scheme needs, then we can do that incrementally versus doing everything all over.
That bring up any questions from the audience? Does anyone have any comments? Or Jonathan, please step up to the microphone.
Got sort of a follow-up or spin-off on that, because we saw some interesting presentations earlier this week about the automated algorithm testing that CMVP is going to. Do the panelists think it would be helpful as we move into an ISO 19790 world where the various countries supporting it spin up their own crypto algorithm validation programs, if they look to, if not necessarily support a common suite of algorithms, if they could standardize on a standard automation suite for testing them so that at least it would be easier to retest the common ones from country to country?
I think that would be an awesome idea, because that way, like, you would be, you know, one country would be able to actually look at that testing framework that a different country had put together I think that that just really encourages so much collaboration and so much transparency, and definitely makes it so much easier for us vendors. It makes things go so much faster.
Okay. Thank
Does
you.
Anybody think that we should go slower in terms of algorithm validation?
Okay. Any other comments?
I'm not sure that that's the intention of the new automated cabs, though, is to share the testing framework. I think it's intended to not, and I guess you could talk to that, but I think it's not intended to be shared or at all.
Well, my understanding, and please correct me if I've misunderstood the presentation, is that there are sort of a couple of parts to it, but I believe the actual communication protocol between the module under test and the back-end servers that are going to be checking the answers is being released and sort of standardized. So while CMVP might or CAVP might not be willing to share the AES reference implementation on their back end, my understanding is they're willing to share the sort of the server infrastructure design that lets you talk automatically to that back end. So at least if another country was spinning up a program and also allowed AES, they might have to write their own reference implementation, but my understanding is they'd be able to adopt the automation protocol so that a module designed to be validated against the US or the CMVP US-Canadian AES thing with that automation protocol could instead be redirected to the other country's servers and very quickly do the same verification, but then that country would be free to add their own country-specific algorithms under the same sort of communication protocol, but a different reference implementation on the back end.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jonathan. That's my understanding of where NIST would like to go, is to provide that so you have a standard, at least communication with the back end reference implementations. The issue comes with being able to share the reference implementations outside of, outside of the U.S. and Canada with, Europe or something or other like that. They'd have to have their own reference implementations unless they can come to an agreement as to what a reference implementation for everybody would be.
Well, I think we might have an easy answer to that. Since it's going to be an automated test system, we can just run the hell out of it against all the different implementations and hopefully we'd get the same answers. So.
And if we don't, we may have a problem.
Yeah, right.
Three yeses and one no is a yes.
Yeah, right. Hey, who?
Yeah, since we're talking about algorithms, I've often wondered why we don't have TLS protocol testing or IPsec or those types of things. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's been discussion with the automation of doing all the protocols, at least in the U.S., and since CAVP has been handling the algorithm testing and their mission has been to do algorithm testing, and for FIPS 140, we only do algorithms, not protocols. Now, everyone's been discussing, and certainly with Common Criteria, it would be ideal to add protocols to that. And hopefully, and I know Apostle has mentioned that, Mike Cooper's mentioned that, so there's been some discussion about adding protocols. In fact, at one point, there was even a comment made that if the protocol testing was deep enough, it might even constitute the algorithm testing. Okay. Because you could, but I don't know, I'm not a mathematician, so I couldn't qualify that statement. But yeah, there certainly has been some discussion and effort put toward adding algorithms to that to make the whole test process easier and quicker.
Yeah, because it just seems that the implementations, that's where, all the bugs and things are found. I mean, the math is sound, but
right.
Higher level stuff is where the problems are, right? So,
yes.
Given that we have, as far as I know, we haven't had significant test suites for the protocols. If we had, we'd have fewer vulnerabilities in the different protocol implementations. So, my skeptic side says the reason we haven't done that is because we're afraid of what might be found.
Yeah, it's probably going to turn up stuff no one imagined, but it would be a good thing, hopefully, to get some of the bugs out. So, do I spin the wheel, or do we have any more on the same subject or adjacent subjects? Okay. This is a good one. Okay, so All of us who do FIPS love all the having to deal with the code review part. Of course, when we used to do EALs, we had to deal with the code review part at the higher levels, but now under the PP type CC processes, we don't do that, except unless you're in some places that still do EAL. And so, and there have been a number of discussions. I mean, there have been talks. I gave a talk a couple of years ago, and one of my major points was saying that code review is a waste of time. Because it doesn't find things, and Heartbleed was one of my examples. What do you guys think about all that?
Okay, I'll jump into this one, but preface my comment with balkanization and wiki. for reasons that will remain secret. This is a bit of a hobby horse I've gotten on. I'm sure one or two of you have probably heard me talk about it, that all of a sudden in the labs we became incapable of doing source code, looking at source code under the CC, whereas we have to look at and review and analyze source code for FIPS validations. And certainly up to EAL4, you're not looking at the entire suite of source code. You are, you know, targeting specific spots, and it really is, you target specific areas to look at the code where, you know, potentially or you think that the vulnerabilities are more likely to come up. I think we should still be able to do that even under the CC, but that's another discussion after three or four beer.
It's actually news to me because we work with a lab in the EU. We have done source code review with them, and it helps to expedite. It helps to add confidence, and the lab is very proficient and able to do that. So,
yeah, I think there's a difference. Just the challenge. It relates back to the previous question about, you know, testing algorithms versus testing protocols. It's easier in the the FIPS context because we're looking at a much smaller set versus looking at a broad set of security function, broad and growing set of security functionality that gets harder and harder to do that. And then the other question is, you know, here's the third party looking at code written that's proprietary, written whoever in the piece. And what to me would be interesting, and I don't have, would be how often is something found? What, you know, on a percentage basis, you might have that assurance, but how often is there really a difference made?
Go ahead.
Some exactly. Evidence-based approach.
Yes, I remember a couple years ago going to a really great session at RSA where there was a security architect there who put up on the screen 10 lines of source code and said, okay, tell me how many defects you find in there. And it was pretty easy source code to read, and there were 10 vulnerabilities in there, and I think altogether we got 5. You know, and we were all professionals sitting in there. It's really, really hard. And I can't imagine as a lab person, you know, someone who's actually trying to audit that code, you're under pressure. You're probably doing this over a virtual machine because you're not allowed to write anything and you don't get any copies of anything because all of us vendors are very paranoid about our intellectual property now. And so now you've got, you know, you feel like someone is staring at you the entire time. Are you done yet? Are you done yet? And how can someone do a great job? You know, you try really hard, but there will be things that are missed. Is it worth it? And I'm not sure.
There's one thing I do want to say. I have been a developer. I have been a lab tester and a lab manager, and I've been a consultant. There's one point that people always bring up the nature of their code being proprietary, and they are always saying they are concerned about letting other people have access to it. Having played 3 of the 4 roles in this game, I've never worked as a government reviewer, but the thing is, from my standpoint and my experience in this over a very long period of time, I wish people would just drop this whole noise about worrying about the labs. There's never been a case of a lab letting anybody's private information out. And the truth is, a lab wouldn't stay in business 4 milliseconds if they did let people's information out. So of all the arguments against code review about, you know, open kimono or revealing your secrets, that's probably the one that doesn't, at least in my opinion, doesn't float at all. It's a total waste of concern. Labs are based on trustworthiness, and you back it up with NDAs and legal backing. And the thing about it is, I don't think that part of it matters. On the other hand, I am one of those people who believe that so many critical vulnerabilities are missed because they're often not in the code that you're looking at. They're not in this. They're often not in the crypto code. They're not in the security code. I mean, look at Heartbleed. It was way the hell over on the side. So the thing is, that's, unless some sort of code analysis tools got better, I don't think, that's my big belief, that code review doesn't do much. Anyone out there? Jump up. Ah, Ashit, come on.
Yeah. So I think so. The code review aspect is helpful when it helps facilitate gaining assurance for a very specific set of requirement. We in some of the working groups in CC have had to go through convolutions just of testing, just because code review is frowned upon. Now, if we did a code review in virtualization PP, we could very quickly, you know, identify whether a requirement is met or not. So in those cases, I think so code review should be allowed and make sense. Where it gets out of hand is when people want to look at code, and when I say people, governments want to look at code just because they think there's something hidden in there. If someone wants to hide something, you're never going to find it by just pure code review. And that's where it gets out of hand.
Okay.
Sorry, if I just nip in with one comment before Kellen. And to your point, would the code have been 50% better, maybe? That's a measure. But really, I mean, some of the things to code review is to look for, again, you target what you want to look for and perhaps can do a better job of maybe finding the more obvious things that were there that really should be cleaned up, because generally, you know, most of the hacks are not arcane, well unknown, obscure things. They are, you know, things that have been around for a while. What are being used to hack items that should have been taken out at some point?
I mean, I think part of the value in the code review that we've seen is that with targeted code review, it does provide the confidence that what you're saying in the requirement is actually there in the code. And so we're not necessarily looking at it. I mean, it comes up that you're looking for the vulnerabilities as well, but you're actually looking to see that what you say you do, you do. And whether that's against the FIPS standard or whether it's evaluation against what you've said in an SFR and common criteria, I think it's valuable, and I think it does expedite and add confidence. But it is very specific, and it's not looking at the entire code, because that, I think, would be counterproductive in what you're trying to achieve.
Cohen?
Yeah, speaking for a vendor, not that I want to make accreditations any more painful, time-consuming, or expensive, but...
really? That's a shame.
Yeah, really. But I wouldn't mind seeing if NVLAP would have a special accreditation for people that claim to be code reviewers, like an actual testing, and saying if a code reviewer is on a review, he's been accredited by us. Because I'm not pointing out any labs, but I've seen a couple of people claim to be code reviewers that didn't know anything about coding. And any feedback from the panel, please?
Any comments?
Vendors, please.
Oops.
I would just think that would be a next to impossible certification to try and manage for individuals. I don't know. What do you think?
We can give them the code that Tammy was...
What is the test for... you give them, you know, 10 lines of code, I suppose, and say, you better find out everything, or 75% of the things, or something rather like that. Yeah.
Find the 10 things that everybody else could only find 5.
Yeah. That's it.
I've also had a really weird experience with one of the code reviewers I was shocked at how much we guided them. And this isn't necessarily bad, but I expected more. I really expected like a primo hacker to be sitting there, you know, like a Katie Mazura sitting there, no, that's wrong. Oh God, why did you do that? You know, that sort of thing. But no, it wasn't like that. It was like, okay, show me this parameter. And I pulled up some code, showed a parameter, and it's like, that's it? You don't really look at all the stuff around that? You know, it was very point by point. And to me, I kind of think that instead of having the vendor being able to assert that they have a code reviewer, maybe this is the place for automation. You know, if there are very specific things that are being looked at, maybe actually we get better results if we did have something that's really automated that's going through and looking kind of like a Coverity for validations.
We as a vendor have also experience with other schemes apart from CC and FIPS, but from the financial world, for instance, and there it's absolutely natural that there is a code review. There's no certification without that. And I always appreciate that there is another person having a view on it, even if, of course, there will be a lot of code there might be bugs and there won't be fine and so on. But if they find some things, then we profit from that and our customers profit from that. And I, as a customer, would not trust any certification which leaves out a code review. That's absolutely unthinkable. And I guess most customers don't know about that, and that's why they are still happy. But I would appreciate that even if there is, of course, no 100% coverage, that's not possible, but it will improve the quality. And on the other hand, what I also appreciate very much is working together with labs, with competent persons, which are experienced and really know the techniques and so on. And for that, you need persons who are able to read code and who are have a bit an eye on bugs and how to find them and so on. If you leave that requirement out, then the labs won't need persons who can read code, and that will not increase my confidence in labs and in certification and so on. Because then I have the impression that they make a lot of hooks, maybe, especially, and what Tammy said, that you can guide them to specific topics or not, and you have it absolutely in your hands to avoid certain, to look at certain things. All this will become much easier. Not that we do that, of course, but I know it could be possible, and I do not want that. Also not as a vendor, not only as a customer.
Any comments back on that?
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying. It's difficult to know what the right thing to do is. I do come back and think about, you know, if you think about the software industry, for the vendors here, how many of you would use something like Coverity, static code analysis?
Wow,
at
nice.
Least some, and it's very, very popular now. And perhaps that's something that kind of leads me to think, well, maybe automation is a good thing to a certain point, because certainly Coverity can't do it all by itself.
To that point, I remember being at I think it was an SCAP conference a few years ago, and Jim Jarzembeck from DHS was giving a talk that when you start looking at some of the code analysis tools, and a very important thing is to not, and for the vendors, not to publicize which ones they use, because then the hackers sort of know, oh, okay, the Coverity, it picks up all of these, we're going to go over here and do these ones that are not picked up. And you basically, I think, have to run the whole suite of different ones, but then that runs into a problem of those are all very expensive tools to be running multiple different ones against your code.
But lots of false positives also.
Exactly, yeah.
So congratulations to the panel for getting the audience participation queue 4D. I basically got up because there's a variety of points that you'd be making. And you know, my background's, I've worked for RSA, I work for OpenSSL, I was around for Heartbleed. Number of static code analysis tools that could capture Heartbleed, zero.
How many people could
capture Heartbleed?
Number of OpenSSL-based validations that have been through the program, greater than 300. The source is open. Source code review, capability, and effectively across at least 7 labs, the ability of the source code review that occurs in a lab to find an issue, zero. Yep. It's hard. You can't automate it.
Hard.
It takes people. And when you're racing through a validation, there is no actual motivation for doing anything. It's a spot check that vaguely something that kind of looks like it's meant to be there is there. It is not a code review.
I really appreciate you standing up and talking. I'm sorry, I have so much admiration for you and the work that you've done. OpenSSL is an amazing thing. So, you know, thank you, and thank you very much for speaking up on that. You're absolutely right. It's a great example.
Yeah, and so there is no magic bullet. Nothing's going to solve this problem. You've got to throw humans at it. And is this a problem that's about FIPS or common criteria? I don't actually think it's anything to do with FIPS or common criteria.
No, but it's a security problem, and we're trying to solve those.
But access to source code and reviewing it, we've seen demonstrated time and time again, doesn't actually improve security. It's a hope that magically somebody will fix it. Well, it doesn't happen. You know, people actually have to have an issue right in front of them, smacking them in the face, doing them commercial damage or reputation damage to fix it. FIPS and common criteria aren't aimed at that.
Yeah. I think one of your points that you made, if I heard it correctly, was that you aren't going to find things that you aren't looking for.
Yeah.
And part of, I think the FIPS validation of OpenSSL was unfairly made the scapegoat for Heartbleed. Doing a FIPS validation, you do not do a vulnerability analysis at all. It is strictly its conformance. You look for it to do what it's supposed to do. You don't do a vulnerability assessment, and it's never been part of it. So, just to carry it to the ridiculous end.
Just to put the record.
We were required to, after that came out, every single module report that was submitted, we had to have a statement that this module is not susceptible to Heartbleed.
Which is kind of ridiculous, given that the OpenSSL cryptographic module did not include an SSL protocol implementation. Right? This is a really good example of an insane requirement coming out. So there was no Heartbleed code in the OpenSSL cryptographic module. It's not even part of the package. It's not relevant. But, it does lead a whole pile of people to doing some interesting things.
Okay. It's always hard to follow Tim, so I'll try. So I think, actually, Aaron, you hit upon one observation that I had, which is that there's a difference between a vulnerability assessment and the conformance testing, where you're looking for something specifically. And to kind of go back to something that Ash had said, one aspect of FIPS is looking for zeroization of keys. And so you can go and you can look in the actual source code to see if it's there. And yet, under the NIAP protection profiles, you might do that same testing with an actual test instead, because there's no source code review. So you actually want to dump memory and then search for those keys. And that can be kind of tricky, because you need an instrumented build of the product, and yet it actually turns up a fair number of keys. You'd be surprised. And it's sort of a comprehensive way. So both actually have their place, but I think that a static source code analysis, a vulnerability assessment, isn't really effective in terms of a certification program. So kind of my question to the panel is a generalization of that, which is, what have you seen over the years from either FIPS or common criteria evaluations that you think does provide good return on investment, sort of catches bugs, catches perhaps issues? Do you have any anecdotes?
To be perfectly honest, the one that we found the most problems with, given various different scenarios, but the one that I found to be the most valuable was what was used to be called UCAPL, because Unified Capabilities was actually looking specifically for a lot of vulnerabilities, and we found several things that those were not the kinds of things that we were testing for, where we already had been testing for the requirements that we knew from protection profile and FIPS.
And was that part of the IA or the IO testing for the UCAPL?
I can't remember.
IO.
I don't remember the acronym.
Right, there's the interoperability test. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Cybersecurity testing. That kind of test does also stig testing against.
Yeah, it was like stig testing.
Stig profiles testing and the ACAS scanning do a huge job of discovering vulnerabilities, problems.
Yeah, in the end, so STIG testing, as the gentleman here was saying, that it can find quite a few vulnerabilities because that's what it's designed to do. I found that afterwards, after doing a FIPS validation, an NDPP and UCAPL testing, I felt like we actually had some pretty decent testing amongst all three of them because there was a lot of everyone was testing different things. It was really quite interesting.
Yeah. For me, at least for me, CC always turns, what I've seen it turn up the most of is protocol, but especially on first-time throughs, no one gets the protocols all right, especially things like OCSP and stuff like that. That's what gets fixed in CC. I agree with Tammy that what's the formerly known as UCAPL, now DODIN-APL, finds the vulnerabilities, and FIPS does the basic ground-level function.
Been involved in 100 Juniper DoD UCAPL certifications, and so it's completely different kind of testing. I think there's value in any end-user testing of any kind, in any third-party testing, but the reality, the Juniper experience, I was just even asking questions earlier this week about, well, how often, do we have, do we fail or have a problem with CAVP testing or other. Usually the issues that we have are some other unrelated issue. And even in vulnerabilities, Juniper, we have a very robust process where we disclose and fix our code and make that available publicly. About 90% of those vulnerabilities or more are all self-determined. We find those vulnerabilities. Some of those are unfortunately found by customers, other people in different ways, but it's a low percentage. So the question is, it's kind of hard to judge the value. There's always some value, but is there the value of the investment that as vendors that we have to take?
Yeah. Lori?
So we do a lot of internal testing as well and look for vulnerabilities and find a lot of them ourselves, and sometimes customers do point them out. But I think the FIPS provides security requirements that need to be in the product, and that's pretty prescriptive. But when we do the common criteria, we're actually talking about how we implement all of that, and we've been doing common criteria to the EAL4 level. We haven't gone to a CPP yet. And in that, we have things like the secure environment and how are we securely developing, and that's helped us to adapt our tools to be better tools to actually recognize vulnerabilities and to actually develop more securely in our environment as well. And the common criteria evaluation itself with the lab has pointed out some vulnerabilities that we've then taken seriously and fixed. So it has been, I would say, of great value despite all the painfulness that it entails.
So from the lab perspective, we don't get to see the continuous evolution of the products that of course the developers do. So we're looking at sort of point, looking at a point in time and then another point in time and that sort of thing. So it's a little difficult to draw lessons from that. But one that I do remember getting, and especially with companies that are maybe new to common criteria certainly or our new development companies, is that under the old common criteria you used to look at the life cycle and exactly what you were mentioning, Lori, that do you have in place those processes that are going to make it easier? It's not going to make it it's not going to give you the complete answer, but easier to be able to track how do you track bugs? How do you go through the code? Do you, have regimented activities for checking code in and out and doing some kind of review to make sure that bad stuff isn't getting in and that sort of thing? And we would get positive feedback on, that was a help from that perspective.
Yeah. And I'm also from a lab perspective exclusively, which is why I appreciate the vendor feedback. Over nearly 20 years of doing FIPS validations, in the early years, there were algorithmic issues, And it wasn't just with smaller, newer companies, which was often the case, but there were large companies as well that had corner cases in algorithms that were failing that was caught by CAVS. And generally, I think CAVS is a really good bang for the buck. It's an automatable test, soon to be automated test. It's definitive. There are other aspects of FIPS which are more constraining, especially because you apply the standard to all parts and you have boundary issues because it's not really a whole product. And there I've seen fewer benefits. Common criteria tends to focus on a specific technology type within the U.S. It's very focused, sort of like SOGIS and smart cards. So I think you get benefit there. But I guess the interesting thing is, as FIPS and common criteria work together, how can the best parts, the most effective parts, be combined and benefit vendors and ultimately then customers? And how can the other parts that are not as, you know, fruitful be shed? That's sort of the question. Thanks.
Nithya has the answer, I'm sure.
Sure. My answer is there is no one solution to this, right? Every one of them has their own benefits. I would not say code review doesn't bring out anything. For example, in this, when you do the FIPS, very often we have found that vendors would tell us there's only one implementation of this this algorithm. We do code review, find out there are multiple implementations. And it's not easy to figure out through any of the tools. And the vendors don't know that deep details to say what's a different implementation. To them, it's one AES. AES as a single algorithm. They don't realize that's been duplicated, so has to be tested. Those finer details have come out only through code review, right? And if you take CC, from the CC's perspective, there were some, when we were doing EL4, there were conditions and situations where testing was not either feasible or not cheap, or it cost so much money, time, effort, then to make the most of the certification, you had to do a code review. That was a good solution, and that was the acceptable solution. Now we lost that, right? So going to NDPP and other PPs, you don't have a code review as a solution. So I still would say code review has a place for in certification, has value. All right, thank you.
I guess
you have the answer then, right?
No, I guess we're just not
Are
without
you
opinion on source
Thomas
code
Jefferson?
Review. So I just want to raise a couple thoughts about source code review. First of all, you're expecting labs to be proficient on all programming languages. I know in our case we have multiple languages used in the same module, which then corresponds to multiple compilers, which then corresponds to multiple platforms. You do not get the same binary in the end if you did that. And so I think even many of the cases of historical problems have also been caused directly by compiler issues themselves or the architecture. And I think, again, I don't want to deny that folks haven't found issues. I think what we're doing is we're scratching at the surface and we're saying, hey, we've solved the problem, and there's a whole lot of other stuff underneath that can easily negate someone looking at very good code that can actually cause problems simply from the compiler side or from the hardware side that you're not gonna see by doing code review. So I guess I'm just asking a little tempering of the thought that code review itself is nirvana and you find everything or you don't, just because of the other aspects of that piece. One other point I wanted to bring out about the vendors not wanting to share a source. Also think about the fact that many of us have ongoing patent work as well. If we shared stuff with anybody outside the company, that is a huge legal ramification.
That's the first valid argument I've heard of that.
So
that's
just
a good point. Any comments?
I just wanted to say that I agree with Sean that code review is not the be-all, end-all. The evaluations, and you look at a broad range of different kinds of information about the product or module that you're considering, and it all goes into coming up with some kind of verdict.
Right, I agree with most of what has been said before, and a lot of what I was going to say has been reduced, but in addition to looking for vulnerabilities, we should be looking for weaknesses. that the common weakness enumeration is a magnificent tool and should be used. Some of the static analysis tools will tie into CWE values, some don't. Compiler tools, the newer versions of GCC and Clang, are finding a lot more things. And if you are not turning on all of the warnings and errors that you possibly can, you are making a mistake. Period. There is no exceptions. I mean, you really need to do that. And if you don't, you're asking to have problems as well. The other thing, some bugs arise because the compiler does not do what the human expects it to, is doing. And, I have this nice delay loop before I run in and do this. The compiler decides, I'm not doing any change of state. I guess I can go right to the next instruction. And we've found timing errors at Juniper that are related to the compiler having fun with us. But a lot of code being used in these modules is written in C. And when you expect an assembler that's written at a slightly higher abstraction layer to be something providing all the protections you need, you're going to get what you pay for. There are newer languages that we should be considering moving, if we can, for new product families or new modules like Rust and other things, which provide a lot more feedback as far as whether you've got closures that make sense, whether you're returning things properly, whether you're actually writing code or just hieroglyphs on the page. So there's a lot going on, and a lot of people will not find everything. And the idea we have to go for is we will never be perfect. That's why we have the certification process. And if we didn't have the certification process and we were perfect, we wouldn't need to have these kind of conferences or do any of this kind of work. It would just work. Probably. Well, of course, there's also the attackers.
Yeah. Speaking of compiler bugs, when was the last time you had your zeroization optimized out?
That just happened to us fairly recently. Yeah, it was a very interesting bug to follow down.
This is a fascinating conversation here. I think we have spent a lot of time talking about the value of source code reviews in this particular second topic. I mean, clearly, the CCRA is going away from it permanently, with the notable exception of some entropy-like kind of stuff and things like that. So the question that I think maybe you said at the beginning really kind of disturbed me, which was, I'm sorry, I don't know your name, but that some countries would clearly never trust an evaluation that did not have a source code review. You guys didn't really respond to that. But that to me is really disturbing to me with regards to the common criteria, because that is 27 countries. And that sort of goes to what I was talking about yesterday in my talk, which I'm not trying to, but it's sort of coming to my mind here to say the discussion around trust and assurance and the lowering of the bar with the CC is a topic in itself that really needs to be asked, which is, we're talking about assurance here. So if there are some countries that are saying that we are fine with essentially an EAL1 evaluation and black box testing, we are confident that if the product goes through that evaluation, that is good enough. And then there's a whole bunch of other countries that are saying, no, we need the source code review every single time. That is a huge problem that is even beyond how, talking about FIPS and common criteria playing well together, common criteria is not playing well together.
I'm just going to make one comment. We are now 10 minutes over our original allotted time. However, this is a good discussion. I have no intention of stopping it unless Bill tells me to or the hotel throws us out. So please feel free to continue. Everyone's welcome to stay until they toss us out or we finally finish at least this question.
Our pilots might have
to. Oh, yeah. Or if you have to catch a flight, but otherwise, let's go.
So I'm leaving tomorrow, so I don't have to leave. But so we keep talking about code reviews as this kind of overarching term. what kind of code reviews are we really looking for? Are we just looking for syntactical analysis? Are we looking for security architecture reviews? Are we looking for conformance reviews? They all have a different perspective, and beyond just any non-trivial piece of code, for the most part, a lot of those aren't going to provide us a whole lot of value unless you spend a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of effort in it. I know, at least taking a look at the FIPS reviews that I've been involved in, a lot of them are spot checks. They don't really go into, are you actually implementing the algorithms in direct conformance to the standards that you're claiming. In CC, we say, for SSH, TLS, we say, you must conform to these RFCs. Are we really going through and reviewing to make sure you're actually conforming to those? Not really. I don't think we ever did. What's the purpose of the code review? What are we really looking for? What would we want to accomplish?
Good question, because I don't think that's ever... Mostly everyone thinks we're looking for bugs, but I guess that's about as general a question as it gets.
And maybe I have at least a partial answer to that, and that's actually... what I want to say here, I can confirm what everybody else prior to me has said. Code review for hunting bugs is most likely a waste of time, because really it is, they are hard to find, even from a lab perspective. But everybody, every vendor wants to have these validations conducted as fast as you can. So still, having the code in front of you allows us labs to answer questions immediately without going back, spending another day if you are in a different time zone, waiting for the result, then the vendor's developer doesn't understand the question. Let us labs please get access to the code so that we just simply can do our job. Is function X or Y, as mandated by FIPS or common criteria, implemented? Do we have it? Excuse me. And in FIPS, especially in FIPS, there are a lot of special, very detailed questions where that are asked that you have to meet, and it's easy for us to check in the code and to say, thumbs up, you have it, thumbs down, you don't. And I think it's easier to have the code than teach vendors how to what we want from them.
I'm going to have to disagree. So
should I put up having a wrestling ring?
Having read testing reports and you go through the tester evidence statements, the number of times a lab has correctly gone into source code is not zero, but it's close to zero in terms of getting an accurate description, because you're not familiar with the code.
Well,
you haven't developed it, you don't live it, you don't breathe it. So the number of technically incorrect tester evidence statements from labs who've looked at code is incredibly high. Now, of course, you still go through and pass the review. If the vendor doesn't bother reading it, it gets submitted and it goes through the NIST and CSE reviewers without a problem. But in terms of it makes it quicker, in my experience, it makes it slower.
So I respectfully disagree. So when I talked about expediting and less cost, so what, one of the things that we do to solve that problem is we have the developer on call or sitting with the code review. So if there are any questions or confusion or whatever, the developer can clarify that right away. So usually the lab will come on site with us, so we have the developers on standby, and it does expedite things, and it does increase the confidence in my view.
And there's no requirement for a lab to do that, and the behavior between different labs varies extremely.
It's true.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
This is just a cross... dozens of vendors' modules in both a commercial and open source space across hundreds of validations. And, of course, there are always exceptions, and sometimes you will actually find, some lab personnel that actually understand the code and get it right. But it's the exception, not the rule.
Now, one of the exceptions to your... Yeah. It is definitely a requirement for FIPS validation that you do source code review. You can't avoid that. Having said that, at least if you do get odd questions from somebody doing the code review, you can provide the answers, and it may well help. Nobody from the CMVP is still here, so I can say you are going to get odd questions coming back and comments, and it may well help you be able to answer it right away, as opposed to having to the tester to answer it right away, as opposed to having to go if they notice something that was odd or something like that, it may well short-circuit some of those comments, taking a long time to resolve.
Thank you for the discussion. I think it's really, really interesting of discussing about it. I wanted to add some perspective to it, and I believe that finally we trying to say that finally the source code review will find all the bugs. I don't think it's the core essence of an evaluation. I think the evaluation and the certification that is in place is really, so you write the security policy or the security target if you do a common criteria evaluation, which give finally a threat analysis in a way of the product, and you try to verify those elements. And specifically in the CC essence, you go through the assets and trying to break regarding those assets. You won't find any hard lead attack for a source code review from an evaluation. I still believe that it's capital, and I wanted to react a little bit on, I don't remember who said that at the beginning, but with the program, I think he left, with the program of actually like having a recognition of like a certain evaluation of the evaluators to assess that they correctly perform their review. And it's actually done in CC under the SOGAES agreement. There are effectively a program to validate, you know, very similar to the NVLAP. There is a program to validate effectively that the testers can do and perform a good evaluation. Given that, that's one point. And the other point is also, sometimes they give actually like a vehicle, a testing vehicle, to assess that all the labs can actually attack a precise attack. So they basically, let's say there is hard bleed in this vehicle, and they ask to the different labs to find this vulnerability. So, yeah, just wanted to.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking about all of the different types of testing and thinking that maybe we need another certification.
Oh, no.
We need a certification that is checking specifically for vulnerabilities, that's its job. You know, we understand what common criteria, especially with protection profiles, exactly what's being tested. With FIPS, it's pretty clear, if you care to look, you know, to see what that is, UCAPL or DODIN APL, that you kind of know what's being tested there. But we don't have anything specifically for vulnerabilities. And as has been pointed out many times, it doesn't matter how great your algorithms are, if your implementation of the, and your protocol looks great, but if your implementation is missing something, then you're still not at the stage that our customers are going to anticipate that we would provide. They always think that, you know, certification, oh, shit.
Oh. So, yes.
I see Alan making an exit. There was CMPP here.
Oh, yes.
I'm in big trouble.
So maybe okay. So I'm starting a little movement here. We need another certification for vulnerability testing.
So Tammy, if I may.
Does it already exist?
I don't know if it belongs here. We could be here next week, and they're going to start charging us rent.
And frankly, under, if you go to Europe under the SOGAES and you're doing an evaluation within that, they look at the vulnerabilities, and they look at it with increasing rigor up to AVA Van 5. So it's already there, but maybe not here in the States.
But through a specific elements, the assets that you need to protect, not all the type of vulnerabilities.
That's correct. It's very focused on your toe and your target of evaluation. Yeah.
You can do EL4, but the key element is the VAN 5, actually. So vulnerability assessment at the level 5, which is the maximum level, and there's need to be an extensive lookout by the lab. So I just wanted to add one thing, is that finally, so I think it was said by, I don't know his name, but the guy from OpenSSL, he said that, and what is interesting is that finally you can find vulnerabilities by using the product. And once I come across a certification for a payment card, actually, payment smart card, and there were an additional lab in the, it was a common criteria evaluation, and there was an additional lab doing a black box testing, and they completely break down the cryptography. So we did a patch and everything went well. But just by black box testing, they were capable of doing very nasty things to the product. So that's also another way of doing it. And unfortunately, on the random part for the FIPS, it's really good. But after, the functional testing is not so strong in the FIPS 140-2 things, which I believe maybe there would be some space for improvement in that part.
Yeah, so in CC, we've discussed vulnerability testing any number of different times. Past number of years, we talked about fuzz testing or other broader penetration testing, for lack of a better term. It's a great idea. The problem we always run up against is the mantra, you know, the testability, repeatability, affordability. You open up a can of worms, because at some point, what tools are you going to advocate that people use? Part of the reason that the UCAPL DODIN finds stuff is they run commercial vulnerability tools. They end up being chatty, and you have to explain why they aren't really problems. But you know, how long are we going to have people do it unless you put some time box on this? You know, those are the issues that we always run into. Having a new certification, you're going to have those exact same problems. I mean, part of the reason we're here today is because we go, hey, certifications are expensive. They take a lot of time. They're complicated, and they're difficult. Not just from a technical perspective, but just a process perspective, resource intensive. Unless there was some sort of boundary on that, in which case we would get back to this question, is it really worth it to be doing it? How much are we going to spend? Is kind of the, that's why we probably aren't going in that direction anytime soon.
I think most vendors right now are in a difficult situation where you have many very large customers, and each one wants to see results from different types of vulnerability testing. Some of them want the pen test, some want a Veracode scan, some, you know, they've all got their things that they ask for, and maybe you give them up, maybe you don't, but it makes us as vendors, we're already going through this as vendors, and we're trying, and when your customers are asking, then you're doing it all the time, every single release, which is even more than what we do for FIPS and Common Criteria.
Absolutely, I mean, yeah. I think it's a place where you could get a lot of value from it. Mm. It's just defining what that would be, and if it doesn't meet your customer's requirements or my customer's requirements, you're still going back to, now we have another one-off thing that I have to do. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it would solve a lot of problems, and it actually probably add more value than we're getting from CC just doing the straight certifications today. But to what end, right? Yeah.
I think in the interest of Friday rush hour, where I think we'll let it call at this minute, thank you all for joining in. Thank you all for participating. Thanks to the panel. And I really do hope, okay, by the way, I'm driving, so that's the question I get to ask, but no one gets to talk about. And thank you. Oops. See you all next year. I know.
Yeah, I know Tim. No, he's not at the conference. So I'm really in the sales organization. Tim is in the same organization as Mark. So,
what?
Let me.
Oh, okay. How is the Thank you.